This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Wells Tech. This is episode 498 for May 23rd, 2017. My name is Martin Spriggs, and I and the team that we've collected here for show 498 is very happy that you decided to spend an hour or so with us, and I'm happy to welcome back, as usual, Sally Draper in her Wells uniform today. Hey, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Wearing my Wells red today. And happy to be here, happy to be recording show 498, and happy to welcome Jason Schmidt along with the two of us this week. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks, Sally. It's good to be here. Hey, Martin.
Hello, Jason. For those who don't know Jason, and that's probably a very small subset, technology, I don't always forget your title, technology coordinator,
director.
School district in Omaha, Nebraska. I get close?
Yeah, you got close. Technology director.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks for joining us. And when Jason's on, you know we're talking ed tech or educational technology. If you've got your camera on, you can see over Jason's left shoulder, that thing that looks like a microwave, but no, it is a 3D printer. Over his right shoulder, of course, is Chuck Norris. His inspiration.
Of course.
That's you know what? We got to keep what's important close to us.
So we have been, this is actually the last educational technology focus show of the school year. And throughout the school year, we've been taking a look at different articles from the Horizon Report. And we've had some interesting conversations with Rachel and now with Jason about some articles. What are we talking about today from the report? What did we cull from the riches of that report this time to talk about?
Well, this week we're focusing in on something they've identified as a midterm trend, accelerating technology adoption in K-12 education. And that trend is collaborative learning. And we thought we'd spend a little time talking about what exactly collaborative learning is and perhaps how to achieve it and how STEM or technology can assist you with achieving collaborative learning goals in your classroom.
It's one of those buzzwords, isn't it? Collaboration. But I think this article goes in a little bit more specificity, you'd say, for educational collaboration because there are some nuances to that. So I'm looking forward to the conversation. Where do we start?
Go, Jason.
Okay. Well, I think the best place to start with is how do we define that? You know, especially when we get all these buzzwords and you hear all the time we want kids to create, communicate, collaborate, and whatever the fourth C is. I can never remember what it is. But be creative. There we go. That was not the same. That was the same thing as create, but that's beside the point. But when we're talking about a collaborative learning project, really what we mean is we have more than one person working on something at the same time. So that could be done in the form of group works or group work or small groups. Where students are working on an assignment and they have multiple people input on the same thing, or maybe it's solving a puzzle or working out something like that. But you need the essence of it is where you're getting multiple inputs, multiple viewpoints, and then reconciling all of those things together to reach a common goal or a common outcome.
And that sounds like a skill for adulthood, right? Because more and more. Maybe it always has been, but I get the sense that more and more we're finding ways through technology and otherwise to make sure that it's not just one brain on a project, it's multiple people working together, and the tools that we have today make that all possible. So you're teaching a life skill, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And as we look to the future and the kinds of skills that kids and that everybody's really going to need, not just from a professional perspective, but even from a ministry perspective too. How much of the work that gets done in a school or in a congregation or anywhere else is just done by one person. I mean, it never is, you know, and when it is, then that person, you know, you don't have any redundancy, or you have a lot of problems when that person doesn't follow through with the things or can't follow through with the things that need to get done. So, you know, this whole idea of having multiple people involved, you kind of end up with something that's greater than the sum of its parts. You know, when you have all of those different inputs and different perspectives that really make things just that much better.
You know, and what you guys are describing is exactly the reason I understood that we had to do group projects in school. And I maybe I'm in the minority here, but I was never a huge fan of group projects in school. And I thought, oh, they're just trying to teach us how to be on a team when we're adults and stuff. But actually digging a little deeper into this subject, there are so many stories. It's just so rich in the fact that people actually retain so much more of the learning experience if it's done in more of a collaborative setting. It's not just one-on-one kind of rote learning, trying to cram in whatever it is the facts are around what you're trying to learn, but it's actually hands-on and you experience things. And maybe you don't always experience it successfully or whatever, but even that is a learning process.
Jason, in your experience in the classroom, is this something, are there techniques to get kids to do this effectively, this collaboration or even socialization? Are there rules of the road? How do you introduce this? And I know when you were in the classroom, you were in lower grades, and that's probably where these skills are developed.
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing is if you're just getting started with something like this, is you got to start small. You know, it could be, okay, we're going to work for 5 minutes together on this math problem. And I want you to explain to your partner how, you know, work with your elbow partner, or, you know, those kinds of things. So, you know, you start small when you're doing these kinds of things. And then I've found in the way that I always did things was when you have to have a lot of structure to it when you start. So, you know, your first major group project, whenever I did it, my first group project always took an entire quarter. And I gave, you know, the kids had, there was a website that went with the whole thing, and they had, okay, this is step one. Here's, you know, who's going to be your recorder, who's going to be doing this. You know, everybody had a specific job that they needed to do. And you have to really provide a lot of scaffolding, especially, you know, because they've never, this is not typical for the way that things usually occur in our classrooms. So, you know, the teacher's role then becomes more of, I'm going to support you guys and make sure that you're doing things the way that you need them to be done. And then as time goes on, the more you do this kind of thing, the better the kids get at it. And it's really surprising how quickly they catch on to how these kinds of things function. But once again, they need to know what to expect. So, you know, when you're doing it in a classroom, you can't just come in one day and say, hey, we're going to do group work today, and then give them something to do and say, all right, have fun, kids. There's some pre-instruction that needs to go on with that in order to make that work.
And I would say if you're introducing technology into that group project, you probably have to be that much more diligent about exactly what the expectations are and who's doing what in terms of technology. Let's say they're sharing a computer screen, so they're on one computer together doing research, or they're working together on a robot, or whatever it is that they're doing, you've got to really spell things out for them.
Yeah, and setting those ground rules both for participation and also for group accountability, you know, how are you going to hold everybody accountable with the things that they have going on? You really need to spell that out and be very clear, and then also consistent with how you work through all of those expectations. So, you know, if one group does it one way and then another group does the same thing and they get called out for it, you know, make sure that, you know, you're being consistent and that also, and that's just good classroom management. I mean, that's not, you know, we're not talking about anything earth-shattering right here.
Right. So, as Sally mentioned, they were doing group projects for a long time ago, when she and
well,
I
not
were
that
in school.
Long ago.
But where's the tech angle here? How has tech changed that dynamic? So we have not just collaboration now, but we have collaboration tooling, technology tools. What are, you know, what's the benefit, and then what kinds of tools are in play here?
Well, I think, you know, when you're bringing technology into the equation, I always talk about technology in education in terms of an amplifier. So, you know, if you're doing things really well and you've got a lot of really neat things going on in your classroom, and you incorporate technology and do it intentionally and in a way that is very supported by your students, and then you make sure that you're doing things in a good way, it's going to amplify the effect that mm-hmm. those projects have. So, you know, if you have kids working on, you know, maybe your group project is they work on a poster and everybody cuts pictures out. You know, maybe the technology part of that is, okay, this person is going to be in charge of the graphic design aspect. They've got the layout. This is the art director. So, you know, maybe this student is going to be working on, you know, color schemes and picking out pictures right. and things like that. And then maybe this one is the media director. So, you know, we've got multimedia aspects that we can add into this. So, you know, if you take those different roles in that group work and in those collaborative activities, and then giving kids equal opportunity to kind of add their own spin to it and work within the context of that group, you get a much more powerful and effective experience when you can include some of those digital technologies into it. And the other thing that this does is it allows you to go beyond the classroom walls. You know, how even you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, it would have been practically impossible to connect with another classroom in China or, you know, a classroom in another state. You know, it just would have been... Or
connect with another student, right? Outside of class.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the technology tools just enable a whole lot more, a broader audience and a broader pool of people to collaborate, where now the classroom isn't so small anymore.
How about any success stories that come to mind for you, Jason? Are there particular technologies, websites, different tools that you can think of that could give us a few examples of how this might work?
Well, honestly, the best collaborations, like live collaborations that I've seen between small groups of students has been with Google Hangouts. One of my, and with Skype, you know, back before Hangouts, everybody used Skype, and now everybody uses Hangouts. But we had, when I was in the classroom, I would connect with, over Skype with classrooms in, across the country. I think I got up to 38 states was the best one that I ever did. And we do these mystery Skypes, you know, they call mystery Hangouts now, where you connect with these other classrooms, you give them hints about your location, and, you know, everybody's researching and kind of, it's chaotic, it's crazy. But that would be an example of a large group collaborative exercise where you're got everybody in class has got the specific roles, and they're, you know, running around researching and trying to find things out. But then you have, you know, the other classroom, the people outside of the classroom, and then also the teachers are modeling that, because the teachers have to get together ahead of time to say, you know, what's our plan, how are we going to do this, and test connections and all of those kinds of things. So, you know, you really get to see a whole lot of different levels of a collaborative activity like that, where things go really well, or when things go really well, I should say. It doesn't always go real well, but
right. but risk then management involved. It sounds like you do need to do a lot of planning and collaborating before the actual collaboration, and I can see where this kind of elevates the need to make sure your infrastructure is not going to get in the way. So if you are doing classroom to classroom, or school to school, that you've got the supporting technology. So you've got, you know, good video, you've got good audio where people can hear what's being said mm-hmm. on both sides, so that there are decent, it's not just your computer mic that you're trying to, get and your computer speaker loud enough so that the classroom can hear, but you've put some thought into conferencing equipment. And it doesn't have to be overly expensive. There are lots of good solutions out there, but you have to kind of think about that ahead of time versus kind of the one-on-one like we do here where, almost any old microphone or video camera would work. That's not going to work in a larger setting like a classroom.
Sure. Yeah. And then, additionally, just I thought I saw your lips moving, but maybe I just had some lag.
My lips often move and I don't say much.
but that brings up another kind of an important point from my perspective anyways. When you mentioned the one-to-one initiatives, you don't really need to have a technology to student ratio of one-to-one.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, for a lot of things that we do in my district, we don't have a one-to-one correlation of technology to students. Most often it's one device or one piece of equipment to two or three or even four, depending on what it is that we're working on. So, because we want them to engage with the technology, and there are certain skills that go along with that. But more important to that is that, that whole idea of, getting kids to socialize with one another and talk through problems, talk about the process, go through things and kind of just figure out, what are our objectives and clearly communicating that between each other, and then getting input from multiple perspectives and then coming up with a solution to whatever challenge or thing it is that they're working on. And, the other part of it is it's more enjoyable for the kids because they get to talk in school, which is not typically the way that a lot of classrooms would function too.
Very good. We hinted a little bit about collaboration school to school. I guess another type of collaboration that comes to mind is just within our synod, perhaps church to church collaborating or school to school collaborating for some shared equipment purchases if you can't afford it in your own school or whatever. I mean, there's lots of opportunities to collaborate outside the classroom as well.
Sure. So. We have some resources that we're going to plunk in the show notes, a couple of good lists for online collaborative learning tools and some techniques. There's a ton of stuff out there because this is certainly mainstream at this point. This is not a new concept. And as Jason mentioned, it is not that difficult to do. It doesn't require huge investment, doesn't need to require a computer in front of every student even to use some of these approaches, techniques, and technologies. So something that the Horizon Report felt that this is a trend that we ought to be paying attention to, and I only see that growing, not just in education, but in any kind of church work or other areas where people need to get together to get work done. So interesting topic. All right. Thank you, Jason, for your expertise and experiences there. We appreciate it. We also maybe want to thank you for over the years, the many times you've appeared on the show. As we're approaching episode 500, you've been a big part of a lot of those, which is awesome, and we really appreciate that. One thing that we have been doing leading up to episode 500 is kind of a little retrospective, a look back at previous years, and we're up to year 2015, so the year before last. We just kind of have a little fun looking at what we talked about and some of the activities and picks we made. Sally, anything strike you about 2015?
Absolutely, Martin. It was a very big year for Wells Tech because it was the year of our Wells Tech conference. Right. And Jason actually was a big part of that as well. He was on the planning committee and presented there, pre-conference workshops as well as presentations. So I think the three of us would agree that it was a great conference. We made a lot of face-to-face connections that we had in our virtual Wells Tech community, and lots of learning went on there as well. So very, very good year. We also kicked off our Wells Tech Photo Challenge, which went for a year into 2016. That was an an awesome thing. We can talk more about that perhaps next week. And then we had our favorite picks of the year. And from my list, I would say 3D printing was probably the biggest thing that happened in my life in 2015. And just the amazing technology that it is. Thanks to Jason and Connections at Wells Tech Conference, my husband built a 3D printer, and he hasn't stopped printing yet. So he's actually doing a presentation tonight about his 3D printer in a local community ed event. So just a cool year all around. How about you, Martin? 2015 memories?
Yeah, I was just looking at the picks, top picks of the year, and all of these are real, surprisingly, still solid. I mentioned the Wells Mobile Yearbook last week or 2 weeks ago, but Inbox by Gmail, that's my go-to personal email client. I go back to the old Gmail once in a while, and it looks like it's 100 years old, you know, when you're looking at the new Inbox, and it works so well on multiple devices and on the computer. YouTube Red as a pick was something that I still use. That's a subscription service that gets rid of all the ads and allows downloading of YouTube to devices, which is real helpful when you do a lot of presentations like I do. And one tool that I use every single day, and that's Pinboard. After Digo kind of upped the ante and was charging for some basic features, I went in search of a new social bookmarking tool, and Pinboard, even though it costs a little bit, I think it's $11 a year, just is dead simple and reliable and something that that I use all the time. So real happy about how those picks turned out. And we had a bunch of awesome interviews, and just to, like you mentioned, Sally, kind of one of our breakout years where we got to meet a lot of Wells Tech listeners, which was kind of fun, and kind of catapulted us into 2016 and now on to show 500. Actually, we celebrated show 400.
We did.
At the Wells Tech Conference. So
probably one of the most memorable shows we filmed. We did it live in front of a pretty good audience there at Wells Tech Conference. So that was cool as well.
Yep. We should mention, while we're talking about Wells Tech Conference, we are planning another technology conference. Sal, you remember the dates offhand or the proposed dates? It's in June, right?
June of 2019.
2019, yeah. Right. Yeah, Jason, you're on the committee as well again. So we dragged him back in for a repeat performance. But yeah, it'll be a little bit different. It won't be just technology only. Those of you that went to Wells Tech Conference two summers ago, might remember that it was kind of back-to-back, pretty close to back-to-back with the leadership conference that the Lutheran Schools Group puts together. So, and at the same venue. So I think that kind of weakened maybe the attendance of both, although we were real happy with the turnout of both. But in 2019, we're going to put both of those together and try and attract as large a group as possible. And we're still kind of working on contracts with potential venues. I think you're going to like it. This in 2019, so maybe you want to pencil that in on your calendar in June of 2019. We're going to be getting together and thinking about leadership and technology, so I'm looking forward to that.
June 24th through the 27th.
All right, there you go. So now you get some pencil in. So no excuses, no vacations, or you might actually be able to do a vacation and join the conference, just looking at the potential venue that we're looking at. So anyway, good year, 2015. Let's jump back into 2017 and look at the news for 2017 in news and tech.
Yeah, interesting article out of The Verge. I think it was just released this morning, perhaps, that IKEA's got some smart lighting that's going to work with the Apple HomeKit, Google Home, and Amazon Alexa. And if you're an IKEA fan at all, it might be because of their pricing, because in general, they have some really low prices and great design at IKEA. And it looks like these innovations and their smart home innovations are going to undercut the pricing of, I think they mentioned specifically, Philips Hue.
Pretty expensive, yep.
Yeah, and so more affordable and smarter homes we're going to have coming toward the end of this year to IKEA, so definitely keep an eye on that.
So do you, I suppose you can order IKEA online. Do you either you have an IKEA fairly close to where you live?
There's one in Minneapolis, so we do make it a stop when we're in town up there.
Yeah, and I can go to Kansas City.
Okay. Ah. So.
And I have to go to Chicago, I want to say, but that's about the same trip as Sally makes to the big city, the Twin Cities.
Right.
It's
good news,
worth
I
it.
Think, if you had tried to kind of be a smart home and get all your light bulbs set up, that would set you back quite a ways, depending
yep.
on what kind of system you did. I did my kitchen, just 5 lights, can lights, and I went with LifeX bulbs, which I'm happy I did because those are all individually addressable. They have their own Wi-Fi connection and so on and so forth. But I think they were like $22 a piece. So 22 times 5, you're in for quite a bit of money, although they say they'll last, you know, 20 years or something like that. But so those are the kind of things you take with you when you move. So
right.
Save the box.
Before you show the house. I've got my IKEA catalog right here. Just funny that you say.
They still mail catalogs, huh?
They do. You can just go on their website and request one. No, so. Yeah, you can order it from anywhere.
All right. So good news for you people that are thinking of getting into the smart home business. IKEA's got something for you. Let's move on to Wells now.
And just a quick mention from our friends at Forward in Christ. They're actually gathering information as they lead up to the celebration of Reformation 500 this coming October. They want to hear from all kinds of people about what it means to you to be a Lutheran. What do you appreciate most about your Lutheran heritage? And so we will definitely include a link in the show notes. They're looking for submissions on an online form, and they don't guarantee that they'll use it, but they are sharing also with ELS, so it might be part of the ELS communication as well. So being Lutheran for the Forward in Christ magazine efforts, definitely get your two cents worth in. How about that?
Very nice. ready, I think, now to move on to one of our favorite segments, and that is our picks or tips of the week. And as per usual, we let our guest host lead things off. Jason, what's your pick this week?
My pick is the SphereoSpark Plus Power Pack. So we're talking about collaboration getting kids to interact with each other and with technology. And the SphereoSpark is a really great tool for that. So if you're familiar with the Spheros at all, those are the little plastic balls with a little robot inside of them, and you can control them and have them roll all over the place and things like that. They're waterproof. So, you know, you can take them into the pool or take them, you know, out to the lake or whatever and have them swim around and things like that. This power pack is something that we have in our district. We just recently got a grant for one of these, and it takes 12 of them, but they call 12 a classroom pack. So once again, the whole intention is that you don't have one Sphero per kid. You have multiple students working with one piece of equipment and then collaborating and working through things. So what's nice about this is it stores them and it charges them and all of that kind of stuff in just one spot, one place, which makes it really nice and handy for a classroom set. But you don't have to get a classroom set. You can just get SphereoSpark just by itself. It's only $129 for one of those. You can program them with Chromebooks and things like that. And you'll also see that there's a SphereoSpark edition that's a little bit less expensive. Only get that one if you have iPads, because that uses Bluetooth, I think, 3.0 or something like that. And the Spark Plus uses 4.0. So this one works much better in a classroom environment as opposed to the Spark Edition. But really cool way to get kids into coding and programming and robotics. And the other cool thing is, you know, it's a clear case, so you can see what, you know, how does it work. That's kind of a neat thing that goes along with that too. So I suggest the SphereoSpark Plus, and if you can, get the Power Pack if you want to use that with the classroom.
Yeah, like you mentioned, you got a grant for that, and you'll need it because it's $1,800 for
$1,800.
That.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, is that the same technology as BB-8, the BB-8 toys that were out a couple years back? I think it is. Isn't
yep.
It?
Yep. It's the same manufacturer.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of fun and a great way to learn about programming and physics. Lots of different applications there for STEM interested teachers and students.
Yeah, looks like it had some ramps and things that you could use with it as well if you wanted to invest in that. That looked like fun.
Yeah, I'd much rather, rather than spending $20 on a ramp that they made, I'd spend 40 cents and get some cardboard boxes and make
have
our own.
Have the kids do it. There
that's
you go.
That's half the
MacGyver
fun.
It, yeah.
Yep.
Blunt.
All right, Sally, what is your pick of the week?
Well, my pick of the week is a follow-up on something that I talked about recently on Wells Tech, and that's creative uses of Google Slides, basically using Google Slides as a desktop publishing tool, and the fact that you can manipulate and do layout in a lot of creative ways that you're not able to do in a traditional word processing software. And I talked about that before. You can change the dimensions of your Google Slides to be 8.5 by 11. Pretty easy to do. It's under page setup and choosing custom. But what this does, it extends what I was describing, and it specifically talks about using Google Slides to create ebooks, which I thought was a pretty neat concept. And sometimes things like that that are just kind of one-offs don't necessarily occur to us, but it would be a great way to put together a really nice presentation of some topic and then save it in a PDF format, which is very easy to do with Google Slides. And they even show, you know, layout that includes table of contents, so you can add hyperlinking to the different slides and things like that. And you come up with a really professional-looking ebook as a result. And so I thought that was a good idea to share with folks. Maybe with summer coming up, some of our teacher friends will want to put together some ebooks for different topics they'll be teaching in the coming school year. And I would just encourage you to try out Google Slides and see how creative you can get with your layout.
Very nice. Google has many irons in the fire, and some of them are super useful like this one. Awesome. Good find. My pick of the week, I think I've picked this before and we talked about it on many shows, and that is our book that Sal and I wrote last year, Shameless Self-Promotion. But the reason I'm picking it this week, it's With All Your Heart, Project Management for Churches, Christian Schools, and Faith-Based Organizations. We wrote this over the course of 2015, 2016. It was our little project, and we cover things like volunteerism and meetings and gathering project requirements, all with some tech sprinkled in each of the chapters. And the reason I'm picking it is that I spent the weekend improving it, so to speak. I should say, I use the word improving loosely because I fixed all the typos, which there were a bunch in, because Sally will attest to this was really a just-in-time effort. So each month we thought, oh, we got to get our next chapter together. And I was coming in, or we were coming in together at the last moment, and editing kind of took a back seat. So I spent most of the weekend last weekend fixing all those problems. And then obviously with technology, things change. So there were a couple items in here that had changed even since last year, a couple of suggestions we made for calendaring and such that are no longer available or were subsumed by another company or changed names or whatever. So I made some of those changes and then spruced up the language a little bit, corrected grammar, etc. So if you're not familiar with the book, but you are engaged in project management, and who isn't in your church or school or faith-based organization, great book. I was kind of shocked at the nice job that we did, Sally. I reread everything again. So it's updated on Kindle. Speaking of ebooks, you can get the Kindle version for $9.95 or the paperback version, which I have in my hand, for $19.95, either one of those. And one of the reasons that I took some time to do this weekend is I'm teaching a class to church and school administrators, kind of the administrative assistant position or school secretaries, church secretaries. There's a big conference at Kettle Moraine Lutheran in a couple weeks, and they asked me to present on our chapter on volunteers. So I thought, well, I'd probably better read it again, but also spruce it up and maybe have some copies available for that. So that was kind of the driving force, but everybody can benefit. If you don't have a copy, there are obviously a couple ways to get it. So grab it. And it's good stuff. I think there are some, it's not rocket science to kind of think through how to manage a project effectively, but to kind of put it down on paper and then look at the sequence in the big picture and the little picture, and then put God's word over the top of it, which is really what we did. Why should you bother? That's kind of what the book is all about, with all your heart, you know, being a good steward. So that's going to be my pick.
Awesome. Excited to know that you've made it updated. And so we have a second printing now, although it's print on demand. So I guess we can't really say that.
Second edition.
Second edition. There you go.
Very good. So thanks for humoring me with the selfless, shameless. Not selfless, shameless self-promotion. All right, I think it's time to move to our ministry resource, and I will keep the mic and share with you something that I was very excited about when I ran across it a couple weeks ago, and I decided, hey, this is worth sharing. And that is it's a YouTube video entitled Visitor Follow-Up with Email Automation in MailChimp. So I put a blog post together. I included the video. So this is going to be on our wellstech.wells.net page under Ministry Resources. Should be released today. And the reason I like the video is that comes from a YouTuber called Rookie Preacher. So he comes from a pastoral background. And he's talking about how he has found MailChimp to be a super useful ministry resource in his particular context. And I think almost every one of our churches and or schools could benefit from some of the capabilities that MailChimp brings. MailChimp is a email application, a mass email application where you could send out emails or newsletters, you know, those kinds of things. And it's all kinds of features. And the feature that the YouTuber is kind of focusing in on for this video is something called automation. Now, automation is something you don't get in the free version. You'd have to pay your $10 a month to get automation, but it might be worth it if you kind of follow along with how he uses it. Basically, he's using it to follow up with visitors. So obviously, one thing that you have to do when a visitor comes in is get their contact information. And one of the key pieces of that is their email address. If you've got the email address, then they can fit into this MailChimp automation strategy where he has sent out, or has a strategy where he's sending out 5 emails over the course of a month, follow-up emails to a visitor. So the first email goes out the next day. So if they are in church on Sunday, he is sending out or putting them into the system on Monday. An introductory email goes out, kind of a thank you. And in my blog post, I talk about some of the things that I think I really like about this approach. One of the things is that first email is kind of short, but it points to a welcome video, pastor's welcome message, which can be very pointed and very personal. Because he's really just talking about one thing. It's not this just big production where he's talking about all the things the church does. He's just on screen talking about, you know, thanking them for coming, some of the things that went on in the service, those kinds of things, and helping them get a little bit more of that personal touch. Another piece I like is that second email is a survey. So use another tool out there that we've talked about on WellsTech before, and that's SurveyMonkey, to kind of get some feedback. So get that interaction going between the visitor and the church. So you want to give them a voice if they want to provide feedback, which would be valuable to you, or give them just a feeling that, hey, there's dynamic conversation going on. This is not just a sterile email encounter. Hey, we want to hear from you. I really like that about the approach as well. He's got some other great suggestions, so I would suggest really taking a look at the video. It's actually very short. It's 10, 12 something minutes, worth a listen. And uses one of my favorite outreach tools, and that is MailChimp. It's what we use here in the Synod office for Together and the Together newsletter and those kinds of things. I'm a big fan of its analytics, so you can know how many people opened it and if they clicked on a link in email. So you have lots of cool ministry-related or ministry-enhancing tools with this. So take a look at the article and the video, and I think you'll probably be inspired to do something with your visitation ministry, or your new member, or your evangelism visitation ministry with a pretty cool tool.
And I'm thinking that if you don't want to spend the $10 a month for MailChimp, you could still use these kind of ideas in a non-automated format, but let technology work for you and present yourself a little bit more regularly in front of those visitors so that they stay connected.
Now that I think of it, that was one of the changes I had to make to our project management book, Sally. In the book, we said MailChimp allowed 2,000 free emails a month. Uh-huh. Now I think it is 10,000.
Wow.
10,000. I forget. I think it's 10,000 emails a month. So the free version really is almost all that you might need if you have that kind of strategy in your ministry. Mm-hmm. Unless you're super big and you're sending it to all members on a more than weekly basis. So mm-hmm. Good stuff. Let's move on to our featured video segment.
And we have a video this week that was recently produced by Kingdom Workers, and it focuses on the Apache mission setting and all the exciting things that are going on there, making connections with people in the work of Kingdom Workers. They've got some gardening projects with children, teaching them how to grow their own food. And they also have, obviously, the Builders for Christ angle, which Kingdom Workers is so wonderful at blessing people in need with building skills. And it's really neat. Some of the people that they interview on the video indicate how much it means to them to be able to connect with people who share their faith and are willing to encourage them in that way. And the food, I guess I should mention, that they grow in the gardens even goes to support kind of a food shelf kind of effort for people in need in the area, people with coming for meetings about addictions and things like that. So just lots of good coming out of the work of Kingdom Workers in the Apache mission setting. And I think you'll enjoy the presentation.
Very nice. So that'll be on our show notes page as well, link to that, as well as links to all of our past featured videos in our YouTube list. Or this is actually on Vimeo, so it's on our likes list.
We've got a likes list. That's right.
All right. Jason, thank you again for your dedication to doing this. We realize that you are taking time out of your busy schedule and your work day to join us, and we really, really appreciate that and the work that you do for us.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Great conversation today. We're going to have a great conversation next week. It'll be a little bit different because Sally and I will be in the same place at the same time, which rarely happens. She's coming over to the CMM for some internal meetings, but we're going to take advantage of that to do our podcast together, which always introduces a new dynamic, which I really like, is kind of that back and forth. It's not always as easy when we're doing it via collaboration tools. We can do a collaboration right there at the same table at the same time.
So, real-time stuff. Yep.
So, and that'll be episode 499. So that'll be the episode before the big 500. So we're looking forward to that as well. So safe travels on your way over here, Sally.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you all for taking the time to tune us in, download it, share it with friends, whatever. We hope that it's been a benefit to you and that you'll tune in next week as well. Thanks for being here, and God's blessings. Bye-bye.